The Curtises had filled out Palazzo Barbaro admirably for over a century. And now that the Barbaro had passed into the hands of Ivano Beggio, the proprietor of the motorcycle maker Aprilia, Venice was watching to see how well the Beggios would fill it out. Beggio had wasted no time seeing to the cleaning of the Barbaro's double facade. He removed important paintings from the Piano Nobile for cleaning and restoration. But then, nothing. Months, then years, went by. The windows of the Piano Nobile remained boarded up. The Beggios were rarely seen in Venice. Specialists hired to work on the restoration were utterly perplexed. Speculation abounded that the Beggios had hoped that their ownership of Palazzo Barbaro would lead to their acceptance in Venetian society, and that they had been disappointed when it did not. Then, the truth emerged. Ivano Beggio was broke. The phenomenally successful Aprilia Motorcycle Company was facing bankruptcy. Palazzo Barbaro was once again for sale, but not for the $6 million Beggio had paid the Curtises for it. The new asking price was said to be $14 million. No offers had yet been made, and, tragically, none would be forthcoming from the young, idealistic Daniel Curtis, the only Curtis in 5 generations to have any Venetian blood in his veins. Daniel had died suddenly from an aneurysm at the age of 47. For a full week after his death, loving notices had appeared in the Gazzettino. One in particular captured the spirit of all the others. Daniel, a friend forever, a great Venetian. The Fenice's house lights did not dim when the music started, because the evening was being televised, which meant that the Baroque Hall would be as bright as a TV studio all night. The theater's subtleties would be lost, at least for now. I closed my eyes and listened to the music. After Beethoven came Igor Stravinsky, buried in Venice. Antonio Caldara, born in Venice. And Richard Wagner, died in Venice. I concentrated on the sound. Were the acoustics a success? The experts had said they were, but of course, for people sitting in boxes, especially toward the rear of the boxes, the sound quality would never be as good as it was for people sitting out in the open. The most distinctive sounds in Venice, however, were not really the ones inside the Fenice. Jürgen Reinhold, the Fenice's master acoustics engineer, had put his finger on it when he expressed surprise at having discovered that the ambient nocturnal sound level in Venice was a very low 32 decibels. 45 decibels was typical of most other cities. The absence of automobile traffic, of course, accounted for the difference. "All this Venetian quietness has me bewitched," Reinhold had said. "When I came back to my house in Munich, the noise was unbearable, but it was only the usual traffic sounds." I, too, had been bewitched by the peacefulness of Venice, and by much more about Venice besides. What had at first been largely an attraction to the city's beauty evolved into a more generalized enchantment as time went on. From the very start, I had kept Count Marcello's cautionary words in mind. "Everyone in Venice is acting. Venetians never tell the truth. We mean precisely the opposite of what we say." I knew that in Venice I had been told truths, half-truths, and outright lies, and I was never entirely sure which was which. But time often clarified matters. Only a few days before the Fenice reopened, for example, I had come upon a revealing piece of information while I was walking along the arcade of the Doge's palace. I noticed a plaque with the name Loredan inscribed on it. I thought immediately of Count Alvise Loredan, the man I had met at the carnival ball, who had held up 3 fingers as he told me more than once that there had been 3 Doges in his family. That much was quite true. Count Loredan also told me that a 15th century Loredan had defeated the Turks, and thereby preventing them from crossing the Adriatic and wiping out Christianity. There was, in fact, a well-known Pietro Loredan who had defeated the Turks in the 15th century, but the man commemorated on the plaque at St. Mark's was a 17th century Loredan named Girolamo, a coward who had been exiled from Venice in disgrace for having abandoned the fortress of Tenedos to the Turks, to the great detriment of Christianity and his country.